अमृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। नाउ वी गो ऑन टू द सिक्स्थ चैप्टर। द फिफ्थ चैप्टर एंडेड विथ डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ अष्टांग योगा इन वर्सेस 27 एंड 28 एंड 29th वाज भक्ति योगा। सो अष्टांग योगा will be described in chapter 6. Let's have an overview of chapter 6. This chapter is called as Dhyana Yoga. So, yes. So, chapter 6 has 47 verses. And verses 1 to 9 talk about advancement in the stage of yoga, in the process of yoga, from Aruruksha, that is the beginning stage, to Arudha, that is the advanced stage. So Aruruksha is, if we envision a ladder, then Aruruksha is one who starts climbing up the ladder. Arudha is one who is situated on the ladder. Like we have Ratharudha, the charioteer who is already situated on the chariot, the warrior who is situated on the chariot. It is said that Lord Vishnu, when he travels, he is Garuda Arudha. He is situated on Garuda. Arudha means to be seated properly. Aruraksha means one who started climbing. So if yoga is a ladder, one who started climbing the ladder and one who's moved towards the upper range of ladder. So first verse, 9th verse talks about the process that one needs to go through by which one can renounce the world. In Dhyan Yoga, one renounces the world and focuses exclusively on meditation. But there is some preliminary purification that is required for that. That is described in 1 to 9. Then 10 to 30 describes progressively how one will attain perfection when one is practicing yoga. So from practice to perfection in yoga. So 10 to 15 describes realization of Brahman. 16 to 23 describes realization of Paramatma. And 24 to 32 describes realization of Bhagavan. Now, after that, 33 to 37, Arjuna raises a question at what if the mind is very difficult to control? So Krishna answers that. So two verses are questions, 33, 34 and 35, 36 are the answer. And then after that, the last section is, if the mind deviates the yogi, then what is the destination of the yogi? Where does the yogi, deviated yogi, fallen yogi go? So that Krishna answers in a very thought-provoking section. And then lastly, Krishna says that the topmost yogi is one who fixes his mind on Krishna. That means, after going through this elaborate analysis of the process of Bhakti Yoga, Krishna eventually comes to talking of, after going through the elaborate analysis of Ashtanga Yoga, Krishna eventually comes to the conclusion that Bhakti Yoga is the best. Bhakti Yoga is the highest. So, that will set the scene for Krishna to start speaking in the 7th chapter, when he will speak about Bhakti Yoga. So it will take, this chapter takes us slowly up the yoga ladder to the perfection of fixing the mind on Krishna. And the next chapter describes an alternative way of attaining that same perfection. So let's look at the 6th chapter now, beginning with verse 1. So the first section is moving from the Aruruksha stage to the Arudha stage. So Sri Bhagavan Vacha Anashrita Karma Phalam कार्यं कर्म करोति यः स संन्यासी च योगी च निरग्निर्न चाक्रियः। सो अनाश्रितः कर्मफलम्। सो वन हू डस द वर्क विदाउट टेकिंग आश्रय ऑफ द फल। इन दिस वर्ल्ड व्हेन पीपल वांट टू वर्क एंड दे नीड मोटिवेशन फॉर द वर्क। सो व्हाट इज द मोटिवेशन? द मोटिवेशन इज द फ्रूट, and they take ashray of the fruit. That means, suppose there is a sports champion, there is a World Cup cricket team, winning cricket team, and the captain is asked, you know, how did you win this World Cup? What motivated you? He says, you know, since my childhood, I was imagining myself holding up the World Cup in my hands, and that dream motivated me. So what is happening over here? This is ashritah karmaphalam. One is taking shelter of the fruit of work. Now the Bhagavad Gita is not against doing things in this world. Now, it's not against achievements. But if those outer achievements alone are our motivation, then we do not make any inner development, any spiritual development through that outer achievement. We do not necessarily go closer to Krishna. So therefore, a person, especially here Krishna is talking about a karma yogi. Now, a pure devotee may visualize things to be offered for Krishna's service. That is different. But a karma yogi is primarily focusing on detaching oneself from worldly things. So therefore, the karma yogi's motivation, as we discussed in 5.11, is Atma shuddhaye. Yogi works primarily for purification, not for phala. So Krishna is telling here, what a yogi has to do in the beginning, anashrita karma phalam. And then, what is karyam karma karoti? Karyam means prescribed duty. Understanding this is my obligatory duty, karma karoti. What I am obliged to do, I'll do that. Sa sannyasi, such a person is a sannyasi. Sa cha yogi cha. That person is the renunciate and that person is also the yogi. So it's interesting, Krishna has suddenly used the two words sannyasa and yoga together. Such a person is a sannyasi and yogi also. If you remember in the fifth chapter, Krishna has referred to sannyasi and yogi as two opposite, two different paths, not necessarily opposite, but different paths. And the third chapter is referred to them almost as opposite. So in the fifth chapter, Krishna has talked about how sannyasastu mahabaho dukkhamaptuma yogata yoga yukto munir brahma achirena adigachyati. So in 5.6, he has talked about sannyasa and yoga as two opposite process, as two distinct processes, not necessarily opposite, but distinct processes. So he has told how both ultimately lead to the same destination. But he says, one who tries to practice sannyas alone, without yoga, such a person, what happens to such a person? Dukkhamaptuma yogataha. On the other hand, one who practices yoga, yoga yukto munir brahma, vachirena adhigachyati, not after a long time, soon such a person will attain perfection. So in that sense, Krishna, what he has talked about as two different processes, now he is saying essentially it is the same. Sa sannyasi cha yogi cha. So who is a yogi? Who is such a person who is both a sannyasi and a yogi? So normally Krishna has used the word yogi till now to refer to karma yoga. Although we may use the word yogi, generally you think of a person who does yogasanas. And generally when the word yoga is used alone, most people think of the yoga marga, the process of ashtanga yoga. But Krishna till now has not talked about ashtanga yoga much. And whenever he has used the word yoga, he has used it in terms of connection with one's prescribed duty. And of course, through that connection with one's prescribed duty, one connects with the absolute truth. But Krishna is here saying that both are similar. That sannyas means disconnection from the material world, and yoga is connection with the absolute truth. That can be by various ways. One way is by doing one's work. So then such a person is a sannyasi and a yogi. Krishna clarifies how the person is the same. How sannyasi and yogi are the same person. Krishna will clarify in the next verse. But here he is saying, na niragnir na chakriyaha. So such a, who is a sannyasi? The person who works. Not the person who does not work. And not working, Krishna talks in two terms here. Na chakriyaha. The person who does not do kriya. Such a person is not the actual yogi or the sannyasi. And among the various kriyas, among the various prescribed duties that are done, a prominent prescribed duty for a person who is a grihastha, who is living in the world, is agni. That actually they're meant to light the sacrificial fire. So of course in Kali Yuga we don't light the sacrificial fire. We chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But either way, nanir agnir. Actually, one is meant to do a prescribed duty. That prescribed duty involves lighting the fire so that yajnas can be performed. Krishna has talked in the third chapter about how one who does not do yajna, aghayurindriyara mamogham partha suchivati. So yajna is an important duty. And Krishna is telling, right in the beginning of the sixth chapter, that one should not give up yajna. That one should not give up lighting the fire in the name of renunciation. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport, that he explains now from a devotional perspective, that the parts of the body work for the satisfaction of the whole body. The limbs of the body do not act for self-satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the complete whole. Similarly, the living entity who acts for the satisfaction of the supreme whole and not for personal satisfaction, the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. So how the yogi, because how is the personal yogi? Because the yogi is connected with the complete whole. So the living entity who is acting for the satisfaction of the supreme whole is in that sense a yogi. And how is the living entity sannyasi? Because it's free from selfish desire. So freedom from selfish desire is sannyas, and the desire for selfless service to the absolute truth, that is yoga. And that's how the person is a sannyasi as well as a yogi. And then Prabhupada quotes about how the perfect sannyasi, perfect yogi, he used the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoting Shiksha Ashtakam. So he said Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada refers to as the highest perfectional symbol of renunciation. So highest perfectional symbol of renunciation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so renounced. You know, he was the example. It says that Chudamani is the jewel among renunciates. So he talks about his consciousness. Adhanam nachanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadishakamaye amajanmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti rahaitu kitvai. So adhanam nachanam nasundarim. These are actually what people in general aspire for. People want wealth, they want followers, they want the enjoyable association of the opposite sex. Enjoyable association, attractive members of the opposite sex. Basically sexual pleasure. And then kavitam. Kavitam refers to vijigdisha kamaya. Kavitam can refer to the fame, praise, learning. Various things can refer to. There are things which people want. This is what people define as success. So, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I do not want any of these things. It's an extraordinary prayer of pure devotion. So in one sense, the first part of this verse is talking about sannyas. I don't want any of these things. Kavitamba jagadishakamaye. So when I don't want all these things, then what do I want? So sannyas means rejection, and then yoga means connection. So, Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that I do sannyas of all these things. I do not want all these things. But what is the connection that I want? That I want to be always connected to you in devotion. Mama janmani janmani ishvare. Even if I had to go through many lifetimes, bhavatad bhaktir ahaituki tvai. I want to be fixed in devotion. And what kind of devotion? Ahaituki. Unmotivated devotion. That means this connection with the Lord, I do not want it to be conditional. Because the Lord does this for me, so I'll become devoted to him. So ahaituki. Without any cause. It's selfless. Pure. So this is the example of sa sannyasi cha yogi cha. One who is disconnected from the world and connected with the absolute truth. Now Krishna will explain this point of sa sannyasi cha yogi cha in the next verse. Yam sannyasamiti prahur yogam tam vidhi pandav nahi sanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kashchana. So yam sanyasamiti prahur, that which is known as sanyas, that is also known as yoga. Yogam tam vidhi, O Pandava, O Arjuna, no, that is also yoga. So Krishna is saying actually they are the same. So what he has talked about in the fifth chapter as similarity in destination, now Krishna is saying there is similarity in content also. How? Nahi asanyasta sankalpo. That actually, if one doesn't give up sankalpa, sankalpa is desire. Desire for worldly enjoyment. And asanyasta means without giving it up. So unless one gives up the desire for worldly enjoyment, one cannot be a yogi. Yogi bhavati kashchana. One cannot be a yogi unless one gives up the desire for worldly enjoyment. So Krishna is telling over here that how are yoga and sannyasa kind of same? That both, that actually there cannot be yoga, authentic yoga, there cannot be genuine connection with the Lord unless there is disconnection with the enjoyments that connect, that take us away from the Lord. It's just like if we want to say that we want to light a fire and we want to remove the darkness. So actually, we cannot remove darkness unless we light fire. And when we light fire, darkness automatically goes away. So the two are connected. So similarly, when there is sannyas, there will be yoga. That when there is to be yoga, sannyas has to be there. If there is no sannyas, then there is not much real yoga happening. So if people are claiming to practice spiritual life, Prabhupada says this in one of the second canto purports, that if a person is chanting Hare Krishna but is still engaged in all kinds of sensory activities, is engaged in all kinds of sense gratification, especially immoral, sinful sense gratification, then that person is not actually a genuine devotee. That person's devotion is a pseudo devotion. Of course, chanting is good, it will help. But if we are chanting sincerely, that should lead to detachment. It may take a little time for different people, the amount of time may differ for different people, but still, there will be progression in that direction. So now, Prabhupada. Now he uses this word, real sannyasa yoga. So now Prabhupada combines the two words as a compound word, sannyasa yoga. So sannyasa is disconnection from the world, yoga is connection with the world. And he says, or bhakti. So he equates sannyasa yoga with bhakti. And he says that this means we simply act according to our constitutional position. And Prabhupada points to this, how these two are combined. The real aim is for the living entity to give up all selfish satisfaction and to be prepared to satisfy the Supreme. That means we work not for our pleasure, but for Krishna's pleasures. Krishna's pleasure. So in that way, sannyasa and yoga become combined together. Now, Krishna will elaborate on this theme of sannyasa sankalpo in the next verse. Next two verses. So before he elaborates, he uses some technical terminology over here. So let us look at this terminology. Arurukshor munir yogam karma karanam uchyate yogarudhasya tasyaiva shamah karanam uchyate. So arurukshor means, as I said, one who is just beginning to climb, munir yogam. So when one is in the beginning stages in the process of yoga, at that time karma karanam uchyate. Karma is the cause. It's the cause of what? Cause of one's progress. It is the cause of one's spiritual advancement. And then one is advanced in yoga, arudha, yoga arudha is to say. But then what is the cause? Shamaha karanam uchyate. Shamaha is inactivity, pacification, calmness, cessation of activity, as Prabhupada translates it. Karanam uchyate. That means, now Krishna is telling that yes, there is a stage when one has to renounce activity. But that is the advanced stage. And he's giving a structure. He says, first, in the Arurukshya stage, work itself will lead to advancement. And then in the Yoga Arudha stage, cessation of work will lead to advancement. So Prabhupada says the Yam, Niyam, Asan, what are all they meant to do? All such activities lead to achieving perfect equilibrium, mental equilibrium to control the senses. When one is accomplished in the practice of meditation, he sees all disturbing mental activities. And so the point is that first we regulate our physical activities through Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam. And Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam can be practiced even while one is in the world and doing activities in the world. But once one goes to the level of Pratyahara means searching out of sense objects, then one cannot stay in the world. Then one renounces the world. And one focuses on turning inwards. And then there is Dharana, Dhyan, Samadhi. There are these other progressive stages in which one goes inward and inward and ultimately perceives the super soul in the heart. So the initial stages, initial four stages, one can actually practice doing karma also, doing karma yoga. These are the Arurukshya stage. So Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pranayam, they are the Arurukshya stage. And the next four involve a person rising to the Arudha stage. So here, let's understand what is going on once again now. So in 6.1, Krishna's focus is on the person. And 6.2 focuses on the path. So what is the focus on the person? Same person Krishna is saying, sannyasi and yogi. And the point is, anashrutaha karma phalam. That person, what is the nature of that person? The person is not taking shelter of the work. So it's an affirmative assertion. This is what the person is doing. That person is not taking shelter of the fruits of the work and the person is acting. And 6.2, Krishna is saying, focus on the path. What is that? That sannyas and yoga both require a common denominator. There is something common which is required for authentic sannyas and authentic yoga, and that is sannyasta sankalpo. One has given up desire. So he given up the desire for enjoyment. So this is a negative assertion. So in this way, by giving a specific example and then talking about a generic path, Krishna makes the point clear how sannyas and yoga are identical. Then Krishna will now talk about yoga aruruksha and yoga aruda. So here we'll see that yoga aruruksha is in the first stage, yam, niyam, asan, pranayam. These are the 8 stages of the process of Ashtanga yoga. Now, in a sense, we could say that these 8 stages apply to all paths. So yam, niyam refer to the rules for individual discipline and social discipline. Now, yam, niyam, sometimes they are said to refer to do's and don'ts. Do this, don't do this. Yam, niyam. Sometimes it refers to how we have to regulate ourselves individually and how we regulate ourselves collectively. So both ways, the important point is that we regulate ourselves. And then these are involved then yam, niyam, asana. Then we sit in a particular position. So yogi sit in a particular asana. And that asana is meant to keep the body in a position which helps the consciousness move inwards. And pranayama is also for the same purpose. When we regulate our breath, by the regulation of the breath, the mind becomes calm. When we are agitated, the breath becomes fast. When we try to slow down the breath, the mind also becomes calm. So the purpose of regulating the breath is to calm down the mind. And then after that is the next yoga arudha. Arudha means one becomes situated inwards. One starts going in the path. So this is pratyahar. So pratyahar means ahar is food. Prati means opposite. So opposite to the food. That means what? Actually all the senses, they want some food for themselves. What is the food that they want? They want, the eyes want to see good looking objects. The tongue wants to taste delicious foods. The ears want to hear melodious sounds. So like that, all the senses have their own ahar. They all have their own hunger for pleasure with their corresponding sense objects. So we pratyahar, we don't feed the senses. So we, the opposite of feeding is starving. So we starve the senses. In the pratyahara stage, a person goes into the secluded place in a forest where there is no sense gratification available, and one turns inwards and starts focusing on the inner truths, focusing on the inner world. So then that is when one cuts off the inner world. So that is the stage from which one is moving towards yoga arudha. So pratyahara, then dhyana, dharana, samadhi. We'll look at these stages in our later classes about how one moves inwards more and more and more. So Krishna is telling, when one is doing yam, niyam, asana, pranayama, at that time one can work in the external world. But after that, one should stop working in the external world and start working and start focusing on inner development. At that time, outer inactivity. Outer inactivity means, see, even the yogi who is in the jungle will have to do some activity for eating, for bathing. Basic activities will have to be done. But here when say giving up the work, it means not doing the duties within the varnashram system. So the person may be a brahmana, but the person doesn't do yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dan, parigraha. The person doesn't interact with the world so much. One focuses more on renouncing the world so that one can connect with the absolute truth. So now, let's look at the next verse. So here, Prabhupada is explaining, Krishna explains, okay, what is it that situates a person on yoga arudha stage? Yada hinendriya artheshu nakarmasva nushajjate sarvasankalpa sanyasi yoga arudhastha dochate. So arudhastha dochate, such a person is situated. Uchate means he is called. Such a person is called yoga arudha. Who? A person, 3 characteristics are described. Yadahina indriyartheshu. Indriyartheshu means one engages in sense objects. One engages in sense gratification. Na karma swanusajjate. one does not engage anushajyate, engage in fruitive activities which will eventually lead to sense gratification. So one is direct sense gratification when we enjoy a sense object. Second is we engage in fruitive activity that will later provide a sense gratification. And third is not only does one give up these two external forms of material activities, direct sense gratification and the pursuit of sense gratification, but also one gives up internally the desire for sense gratification. This is quite a serious stage of renunciation. Sarva sankalpa sannyasi. So one has given up all desires. So at that time the person is yoga arudhas tadochyate. So here what is Krishna telling? Three characters of yoga arudham. So in A, that is, the person is not engaging in sense gratification, na indriya artheshu. The person is not pursuing sense gratification, that is, na karmasu anushajyate. And one is not even desiring sense gratification, that is, sarva sankalpa sannyasi. So one doesn't engage, one doesn't pursue, one doesn't desire. Then at that stage, one is situated in the yoga arudha. Yoga arudhas tadochyate. So after describing this, now Krishna moves forward and describes what is the main obstacle in coming to the yoga arudha stage. So he talks about the mind now. In fact, the whole process of yoga is largely centered on controlling the mind. So let us look at this verse. This in the next next verse in the section talk about how one can come to the yoga arudha stage by bringing the mind under control. Udhare dātmana ātmānam nātmānam avasādayet ātmaiva hi ātmano bandhur ātmaiva ripurātmanah. So udhareth ātmanātmānam. So here the word ātmā is used several times. So one ātmā refers to the soul, one ātmā refers to the mind. So ātmanā, by the mind, the soul, ātmānam. So one should elevate. Udhareth means to elevate, to deliver, to liberate. So uddhar karna means it. So uddharet atmanatmanam. One delivers the soul by the mind. That means we direct the mind in such a way that the soul becomes elevated. We discuss what that means. Na atmanam avasadayet. Avasadayet means to put to degradation. So they are two opposites. Rise up, raise up, or push down. So don't engage the mind in such a way that the soul will become degraded. And what do we have to recognize? Atmaiva hi atmano bandhur. That the atma, the first atma refers to the mind. The mind is the bandhu, the friend of the atma, that is the soul. So the mind is the friend of the soul. And atmaiva ripuratmanaha. The mind is also the enemy of the soul. So in this way, Krishna is giving us the broad framework of what is involved in purification. He is telling that in the inner landscape, the soul, the mind has to be directed in such a way that the soul will become liberated, not entangled. And actually both can happen because the mind can act as the enemy of the soul and the mind can act as the friend of the soul also. So let's try to understand what is being talked about over here. We have talked quite frequently about the mind in our earlier classes also. In the context of this verse, the focus is on the yogi is trying to now renounce the world and focus inwards. So now, generally speaking, we will see that if we are physically engaged, the mind also stays engaged. It's not necessary, but it's conducive. You know, if we have to sit at one place and we are not doing anything physically, then what happens? The mind becomes idle also. In the conditioned stage, the mind is very connected to the body. That means, where we are physically, largely determines where we will be mentally. So if we are physically exposed to sense objects, then our mind also gets excited about sense objects. And if we are physically removed from the sense objects, then the mind's excitement also decreases. It will not go away, because the mind is very if the mind is very captivated by the sense objects, then still the mind may stay excited. But in general, when in the initial stages, the mind is very connected with the body. And wherever we are physically affects us where we are mentally. So therefore, when this connection is there between the body and the mind, so we understand that. Now there are two different connections. There is the connection of the mind with the soul, and there is the connection of the mind with the body. So this verse is talking of the connection of the mind with the soul. The mind can act as a friend of the soul, the mind can act as the enemy of the soul also. So how do we understand this relationship? Suppose I am sitting here, and now there is a door, I am in a room, and there is a door in front of me. And this room is otherwise dark. If the door is opened, then I can see outside. So light streams in and I can see outside. If the door is closed, I can't see anything. Now just expand the scenario and suppose that there are three doors. And each of these doors it opens, it shows a pathway. And at one time, one door alone can be open. And I cannot determine absolutely, but I have some control over determining which door will be open. I cannot say that all three doors have to be open. So, like that, the door to the consciousness is the mind. So, we perceive the outer world through the mind. So, the door to the outer world is the mind. So, wherever the mind is opened, that is the reality that we perceive. And the other reality, we become blind to that. What does this mean? Sometimes, some materialistic people come to the temple, and when they come to the temple, the door of their mind is open only to materialistic things. So, even when they come to the temple, all that they say, oh, there's such expensive marble here. Oh, these chandeliers, how expensive these must be. And then they look around, you know, how good looking are the members of the opposite sex in the temple. You know, they practically don't even notice the deities. And then somebody says, Bhagwan hai aapke darshan. Please, there's the God also take darshan. Fold their hands, okay, and pray something and go. So what happens is the door of their consciousness is not opened towards Krishna at all. The door of their consciousness is the mind. Because the mind is materially conscious. So all that they see is material things. They do not see spiritual things at all, practically speaking. So like that, our mind, it is the door to our consciousness. So whatever level the mind is at, that's what we are conscious of. So now what Krishna is telling in this verse is that actually the soul can become conscious of spiritual things, or the soul can become conscious of material things. When the soul becomes conscious of material things, then the bond between the soul and those material things increases, because the desires are aroused and those desires bind the soul to the body and the soul, by extension, to the world. That's how it causes bondage. So when in our mind we focus on the sense objects, we dwell on the sense objects, then desire awakens in them, and that's how the soul becomes bound. So it's like there's a door. That door can be opened towards spiritual things. It can be opened towards Krishna, it can be towards devotees, towards Bhagavad Gita, towards the holy name. Or it can be opened towards the sense objects of this world. So whichever way the door opens, that is where our consciousness will go. So Krishna is telling over here, we have a choice. We can open the door of our consciousness, that means we can focus our mind on the sense of worldly objects, or we can focus it on Krishna. And depending on what we focus on, accordingly we will get the results. Therefore Krishna is alerting us, use the mind in a way that will bring about liberation. So Prabhupada quotes here from the Upanishads, he quotes here from the Amrita Bindu Upanishad. He quotes that mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayo bandhaya vishaya sango muktyai nirvishayam manaha. So mana eva manushyanam, that for the people, karanam bandha mokshayo, that the mind is for the people, for the human being, for the living being, is the cause of both, karana is the cause of both bondage and liberation. So the same truth that is talked about in Gita Upanishad is talked about in another Upanishad, the Amrita Bindu Upanishad. So bandhaya vishaya sango, that when does the mind cause bondage? Vishaya sango. When attachment to the sense objects, when the mind focuses on the sense objects, the mind causes bondage. And muktiyai, the mind will lead to liberation when nirvishayam manaha, when the mind becomes free from obsession with the sense objects. So now, of course, how will the mind become free from captivation with the sense objects? That also will require some effort. And ultimately, for that, we need to fix the mind on Krishna. And that's why Krishna will talk repeatedly in the later chapters of the Gita, Manmana Bhavmad Bhakto. And even in 6.47 also, he will say that, fix the mind on me, that person who does that, Yogina Visarvesham Madgatena Antaratmana. The topmost yogi is one who fixes the mind on me. So that is there. So as of now, in the Gita's progression, the spiritual reality, what it is not been revealed. All that has been talked about primarily is, okay, that material reality is the source of bondage. Therefore, one has to stay away from it. So what is the way to stay away? Some people say, we'll just withdraw away from the material reality. That is the path of inaction. Krishna is saying, no. Engage in the material reality, but for the sake of purification. That's what Krishna has talked about in the Bhagavad Gita till now. So now, Krishna is telling over here, that's why the Amrita Bindu Upanishad is saying over here, that fix the mind on, don't let the mind be fixed on sense objects. So what it should be fixed on? Because the positive spiritual reality is not known over here, so one, that may not be said. But once the positive spirituality is known to be Krishna, then the mind will be fixed on Krishna. So muktyai nirvishayam manaha. Nirvishayam means, when the mind is free from sense objects, at that time one becomes mukta. So, we have the choice. So actually speaking, we may wonder, do I really have control over what I fix the mind on? The mind goes here, the mind goes there. See, we do not have absolute control, but we do have significant control. Just like if we are driving a car, then the car will by default move off track. And that's why the person has to be on the steering wheel and the person has to keep again moving the car. So that if it's going off this track, bring it back on this track. If it's moving this way, bring it this way again. So whichever way it's moving, by its own motion, the steering wheel moving in the opposite direction and bring the car back on its track. So that's what is the purposes of the driver. The driver is trained and paid so that the driver keeps the car on track. So what is required is conscious, consistent cultivation. Conscious, consistent cultivation. The mind by its nature goes off track. So we don't have absolute control over the mind. We may not be able to stop the mind from going off track. But when the mind goes off track, we can bring it back on track through cultivation. Conscious, consistent cultivation. Conscious, we have to be conscious. Okay, where is the mind going right now? If we are unconscious, just lost in our own thoughts, then what happens? The car will just go off track, it may fall into a ditch, and then we will break our head, and then we will really become unconscious. And when you come back to consciousness, what happened? My God. So like that, we may fall into some terrible sort of Sanskrit, and then we come back to consciousness. What did I do? Why did I do that? It's insane. What happened to me? So, that's why we have to be conscious. Actually, many people talk about freedom. We want freedom. And they oppose. They are fearful. They dread totalitarian governments. The dictatorships. The tyrants who exercise absolute control over them. They violate their liberties. So yes, that is one threat to individual freedom. But the greatest threat to individual freedom is the individual. The greatest threat to individual freedom is the individual. That means, we are the greatest threat to our freedom. We actually act in ways by which we hurt ourselves. And when we hurt ourselves, we lose our freedom because of that. So we are the greatest threat to ourselves. And therefore, what is being said over here is, conscious, consistent cultivation. Conscious. So that we don't go off track. You know, when there's a threat, if we are on alert, then we can counter the threat before it destroys us. But if you're not alert, then the threat may destroy us, and after that, it may be too late. So conscious and consistent. It's not that, okay, today I was very alert in my agenda, next day I go to sleep. That won't be consistent. Because the mind can attack any time. In fact, when a war is going on, at that time, the enemy, in fact, will launch its most ferocious attack when it sees that the other party is lower the guard. Because in that, if the other party lower the guard, then before the guard comes up, then thak, the enemy can be destroyed. The party can be destroyed also. That's why in a war, inattention can spell destruction. if two people are, two soldiers are facing each other with a gun, if one of them just looks here, in that moment the other party shoot the bullet and destruction. So inattention can spell destruction. And that's why what is required is conscious, consistent cultivation. Cultivation of what? Cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Cultivation of fixing the mind on Krishna. So that's how we will use the mind for Uddhred Atmanatmanam. We'll use the mind for elevation, for liberation. Now, Krishna will elaborate on this point, in this, which is talked about in this verse. The mind can be the friend as well as the enemy. So we wonder, how can the same friend, same entity, the mind, can act as friend and can act as enemy also? Krishna describes then, that determine, Krishna says, that describes that, that determine, that depends on who is in control. If the mind is in control, the mind will become our enemy. If we are in control, then the mind can act as our friend. That is the next verse. Bandhuratma atmanastasya yenatmaivatmanajitaha anatmanastu shatrutve vartetatmaiva shatruvat. So bandhur atma atmanas. So atma and atmanaha. So the atma is the friend, atmana is the soul. So the mind is the friend of the soul when yena atmaiva atmana jitaha. When by the mind, when the mind has been conquered by the soul. That means when the mind is controlled, the mind is the friend. And anatmanastu shatrutve. Anatma. Anatmana means when one, the mind is not under control. Shatrutve. Vartet will remain atmaiva shatruvat. The same very mind will remain, will act as the enemy. Shatruvat, as an enemy. So, here, Krishna, in both these verses, 6.5 and 6.6, actually uses the word Atma to refer to both the mind and the self, and the soul. So, we have discussed various times that the word Atma can have many meanings. So, here, the verse makes best sense when the word Atma is used to refer to the mind. Now, if the Atma is used to refer to the soul also, then we have to have think of it in terms of actual soul and a conceived soul. That means the meaning would be what? That the self is the friend of the self and the self is the enemy of the self. So one should elevate the self by the self and not degrade the self by the self. So when the self is in control of the self is the friend of the self. When the self is not in control of the self, then self will remain the enemy of the self. So what is this self? Just leave me to myself. Don't trouble me. It's too much of an intellectual headache for me to think of such things. So now, that will be difficult for us to understand. So some acharyas have referred to Atma as the self also over here. So then, if it is used in that sense, what it means essentially is that actually, there are some commentators who talk about in terms of the lower self and the higher self. The lower self is what we currently identify ourselves to be. And higher self is what we actually are and what we potentially can become. What we essentially are. So what we essentially are is the soul. The soul is pure. The soul is a part of Krishna. And the soul is meant to act in selfless love. So that is our higher self. And the lower self is who we presently misidentify with. That is our body, our attachments, and our misconceptions, our prejudices. And we think this is what I am. So actually there is a difference between the two. So the lower self drags us down and the higher self, if we act on the level of the higher self, we will become liberated. So the lower self and higher self are conceptions that can be used, if we want to, for the sake of clearer understanding. So, bandhur atma atmanastasya yena atmaiva atmana jitaha. That means that, so the self is the enemy of the self and the self is the friend of the self. What would you refer this to? Is refer to the lower self and the higher self. And there's a conflict going on between the two. So if the higher self wins, then we become elevated. The lower self wins, we become degraded. So that's why these are words which can be used, but Srila Prabhupada keeps things simple for us, and that's also true. The mind is the enemy, the mind is the friend. And what determines if the mind is in control, and the mind can become the enemy. The mind is controlled, the mind is the friend, just like a horse. When a person is riding on a horse, or a person is riding on a chariot that is driven by horses, so at that time, if the horse is in control, the horse may go here, the horse may go there, and then the chariot will meet with an accident. But if the charioteer is in control and the horses are controlled, then the horses are the means by which the chariot can go fast. If that same person has to run by foot, that person cannot go as fast. So, when we are living in the material world, we need matter to interact and act in the material world. So, we need the mind and the senses. We cannot just wish away or reject the mind and the senses. We need them, but we have to regulate them. That's what Krishna is talking about over here. Now, Srila Prabhupada's whole purport here focuses on the point of following a superior dictation. So, the constitutional position of the living entity is to carry out the order of the superior. So, Prabhupada is saying that as long as one's mind remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, avarice, illusion. Avarice refers to greed. So, these anarthas. But when the mind is conquered, when voluntarily agrees to abide by the dictation of the personality of God, who is situated in the heart of everyone as Paramatma. That means we are all servants always. Now, either we can serve Krishna or we can serve Maya. Either we can serve the Almighty or we'll find that our senses will become Almighty. You know, the tongue will drag us, come on, eat this. Genitals, come on, enjoy this. The mind, go and do this. Think about this, enjoy this. So actually, the soul is a servant. Soul can either be servant of Krishna or the soul will have to become the servant of Maya. So we don't have any third choice. We may feel that, oh, I'm not going to follow sense gratification, but I will not surrender to Krishna also. We might be able to stay in that situation for a little time, but that is a metastable stage. We'll fall off. Fall off. Generally, we'll be dragged down to sense gratification. We'll try to stay, unless we are consciously trying to pull ourselves up. By default, there is gravity which will drag us down. So just as there is gravity there in this world, which drags objects down. Similarly, there is gravity with respect to consciousness also. By default in the material world, our consciousness goes down. It goes down towards sense objects, towards sense gratification. So, we need to consciously push upwards. And we have to hold on to Krishna through the process of Bhakti Yoga, or the process of any yoga in general, but Bhakti Yoga is the easiest, by which we will move upwards. So, here Krishna is telling that, Prabhupada is telling that, we have to follow somebody's order. So we cannot just stay suspended. You know, either we are being pulled up or we are being pulled down. So that way, that's our situation. We have to follow either Krishna or Maya. If we want to disobey the mind, we need to obey Krishna. And if we disobey Krishna, we will be bound up becoming obedient servants of the mind. The mind says, come on, go to sleep. So we'll go to sleep. The mind says, come on, watch this TV. We'll watch that TV. Actually, most of the time, we act as very surrendered servants of the mind. Surrendered servants. You know, when the mind says, oh, come on, do this. So, sarva dharman parityajya maya mekam sharanam raja. What happens is, we give up everything else and we surrender to Maya. Whatever the mind tells, actually, if we look back at our life, there are so many times when we could have been doing such much more responsible, fruitful, joyful activities. But the mind says, come on, don't do this, go there. Go, talk that, do this. And then we just leave that and go in that direction. Whatever the mind is impelling us. That's what, actually, we trust the mind too much. Instead, we should learn to trust Krishna. But Krishna is our well-wisher. And what Krishna is telling us to do, that is in our best interests. What the mind is telling us is not in our best interests. So, now Prabhupada explains how if we follow Krishna, then we can become free from the obedience to the mind. So in the next verse, Krishna will describe the symptoms of one who has conquered the mind. So, when will the mind become the friend? And that is when we have gone beyond equality. That's beyond duality. Chitatmanah prashantasya Paramatma samahitaha shitoshna sukha dukhesho tathamana apamanayo jitatmanaha. The person who has conquered the mind, what happens to that person? Prashantasya. That person becomes shant, deeply peaceful. So not just peaceful, but deeply peaceful. Prashantasya. And then Sri Prabhupada says Paramatma, the transcendental soul, Samahitaha. Samahitaha means one is approached, come close to. So actually this is the first verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the word Paramatma is used. Before that there have been references to the Absolute Truth, but that Absolute Truth has not been named specifically as the word Paramatma. Later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will refer to who is this Paramatma. For example, he will talk about in 13.23, Upadrishta Anumantacha Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara Paramatme Ticha Pyokto Dehesmin Purusha Para. So he is saying that in this body, there is a transcendental Purusha, a transcendental person, and that person is the overseer and the permitter, and that is known as the, he is the enjoyer and he is the maintainer, and he is known as Paramatmeti Chapyokto. So exactly who the Paramatma is, that will be explained earlier, but it's the first reference to the word Paramatma in the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is telling that, so we are, the soul is here, the super soul is right next to us, but the soul has turned away, and the soul is looking outwards to the material world, and is wanting to enjoy the material world. And what is causing the soul to enjoy is the mind. The mind is filled with fantasies for material enjoyment, and as the mind drags the soul away. So when we bring the mind under control, then what happens is, the force that is dragging us away, that is directing us away, distracting us away from the super soul, that force becomes subsided. And when that force subsides, then we can turn towards Krishna. So Krishna is telling over here that Jitatmanaha, one who has conquered the mind, Prashanta. So the mind is always causing us agitation. This is wrong, that is wrong, get that. This is not proper. So because of the mind, so many agitations come up. So when the mind becomes controlled, Prashanta, you will become peaceful. And then when you are peaceful, we are not excited falsely by hopes of pleasure in this world. Then we will turn from the outer world to the inner world. And then Paramatma Samahitaha will become, will approach the super world. And then the character such a person is, that person is not too affected or excited by dualities. And Krishna is talking about dualities at three levels over here. Sheet, Ushna, Sukha, Dukkha. Shita, Ushna, Dukkha, Dukkha. Tha, Mana, Apamana, Yo. So Shita, Ushna is at the level of the body. So pleasure and heat and cold, at the level, physical level. Sukha, Dukkha is at the mental level. And Mana, Apamana is at the level of the ego. Honor and dishonor. So all these three dualities, one transcends. Then Krishna describes in the next verse about how such a person is situated and what is the vision of such a person. So, Jnana Vijnana Truptatma. So by Jnana and Vijnana, one becomes Truptatma. So, Jnana Vijnana Truptatma Kutastho Vijitendriya Yukta Tyuchate Yogi Samaloshtrashmakanchanaha. So Krishna is telling over here, one who has got knowledge and realization, Jnana Vijnana Truptatma, such a person becomes satisfied. The person is Kutastho. Kutastho means spiritually situated, not materially disturbed. Vijayatendriya, that person has conquered the senses. And Yukta Ityuchate Yoga. Yukta means well situated, connected. Prabhupada translated, competent for self-realization. Yukta Ityuchate Yogi. And that person is having an equal vision towards material things. Sama Loshtra Ashma Kanchanaha. That person is having equal vision towards what all things? Loshtra is pebbles, Ashma is stones, and Kanchana is gold. So from the material point of view, gold is precious. Gold is invaluable, and stone is practically not of much value, it's valueless. Now how can somebody see gold and stone equally? What it means is that one doesn't imagine that worldly things will make me happy. One understands that for me as soul, neither gold nor stone matters. Neither of them can make me happy. They are both material, whereas I am spiritual. And the person who is spiritual cannot be satisfied by anything material. So that's why the person becomes detached. Samaloshtrashmakanchanaha. Now, Prabhupada gives a very beautiful meaning of Samaloshtrashmakanchanaha. And he connects that first with Jnana Vijnana Truptatma. So only by knowledge and self-realization, by theoretical knowledge and realized knowledge, only then a person can become satisfied. Otherwise, one will stay dissatisfied. So Prabhupada writes, book knowledge without realization of the Absolute Supreme Truth is useless. Useless in terms of, it will not bring any satisfaction. It will not bring about any transformation. It will not bring about any purification. It's useless. And Prabhupada quotes that, the famous verse which is from Bhakti Samvit Sindhu, that Atah Sri Krishna Namadi Na Bhavet Grahayam Indriyai Sevon Mukhe Hichivhadav Swayam Eva Spurutyadha. So the name and other paraphernalia of Krishna, Na Bhavet Grahayam. Grahayam means to be accepted, to be understood, Indriyai. So Indriyai, the gross senses, cannot understand, the materially contaminated senses cannot understand this. Na Bhavet. But Sevon Mukhehi Jivha Dau. Adau is in the beginning, Jivha. So service, Seva, will begin with the Jivha. Then what happens by this Jivha? We become Unmukh. We are all currently Vimukh from Krishna. Krishna is here. But we are not Unmukh. Our face is not turned towards Krishna. Our face is turned away from Krishna. We are Vimukh. So by rendering service to Krishna, we show Krishna, Krishna, I want to come closer to you. So service is the way we change our orientation 180 degrees from Vimukh to Unmukh. Sevon Mukhe Jivhadav. And when we do this, when we turn towards Krishna, then Krishna by his own free will, Swayam Eva Spuratyada, by his own free will, spontaneously Spuratya. Spuratya means Spurti, is remembrance which Krishna gives us. That kind of remembrance when Krishna gives us, that is very absorbing. See, there is Smaran and there is Spurti. Smaran means we are consciously trying to cultivate the remembrance of Krishna. And that is a part of our sadhana bhakti. Smaranam is one of the limbs of devotional service. So we consciously strive to remember Krishna. Okay, this is what I should do, this is what I should do, this is what I should do. Smaranam. And on the other hand, Spurti means, so Smaranam is we are trying to cultivate remembrance of Krishna. Spurti means Krishna himself gives us remembrance. And when that happens, just it's like a wave of spiritual devotional thought that takes us rapidly close towards Krishna. So in an ocean, say Smaran is like we are trying to move towards a particular destination by swimming. And Spurti means suddenly a wave comes and takes us in that very direction only. So we do service, we chant the holy names, and by all this, we are trying to remember Krishna and turn towards Krishna. That's our sadhana bhakti. But when Krishna becomes pleased by our endeavors, then he gives a wave. So that's the Spurti. When that wave comes, we just propel towards Krishna. So far more rapidly than what we would be by our own conscious effort. So this is how Krishna reveals himself. So what is the connection of this with the verse? Krishna is telling that, that the real understanding of himself comes by vijnana. And then when we realize the sweetness of Krishna, then we become trupta. So otherwise just by jnana, when things are theoretical, I am not the body, I am the soul. Actually, spiritual happiness is far greater than material happiness. But I think material, I feel as if material happiness is only far greater. Spiritual happiness is not there only. So that way we will not be satisfied. We will not be trupta. We will always be restless. So, actually, what we have to do is, we have to turn inwards. We have to turn inwards. When we turn inwards, then we move forwards towards Krishna by that. So how we turn inwards is by the practice of devotional service. So when we turn inwards towards Krishna, we relish and then we become trupta. Jnana vijnana trupta atma. So when there is only jnana, no vijnana, there is no trupti. And that's why we get dragged towards sense gratification. And when there is no vijnana, there is no realization, then not only desires come up, but doubts also come up. So Prabhupada explains that by transcendental knowledge, one can remain steady in his convictions. But by mere academic knowledge, one can be easily deluded and confused by apparent contradictions. So by transcendental knowledge, Prabhupada means that realized knowledge, one can remain steady in convictions. Because to understand there is a higher reality that is pursued when our consciousness becomes elevated. But by mere academic knowledge, I know this thing, some simple dry facts we know. We have not got any rasa. Then what happens? One can be easily deluded and confused by apparent contradictions. So now, Jnana Vijnana Truptatma, and such a person, Samaloshtashma Kanchanaha. So Prabhupada explains, for him, mundane scholarship and mental speculation, which may be as good as gold to others, are of no greater than greater value than pebbles or stones. So, mundane scholarship and mental speculation. So now, let me somebody may have a very lofty degree, a PhD, one PhD, two PhDs, three PhDs. So these are like gold. People spend years and years of their life to get these degrees. So now, at one level, the person certainly requires diligence and hard work to get those degrees. So to that extent, that can be valued. But you have to understand that just academic scholarship doesn't equate with spiritual advancement. So therefore, when one has this academic scholarship, if one mistakes it, that this itself, if just a person has so much knowledge, that means the person must be very advanced. Then, in that situation, we become misled. But a devotee is not misled like that. A realized devotee understands, oh, this person may have a lot of knowledge, but that person doesn't have attraction towards Krishna, doesn't love Krishna. And the purpose of this knowledge is to learn to love Krishna. So that's why that has not become very attractive. So some people may see academic scholarship as gold, but a devotee understands, from the point of spiritual perspective, this has no capacity to provide happiness. This is just like stone. This is not going to bring any real happiness. So now, we can look at this from the purely materialistic perspective, gold is precious and stone is not so valuable at all. From the detached jnani perspective, if one sees, neither stone nor gold can give me happiness, so I don't care for either of these. Now from the devotee's perspective, whatever can be used in Krishna's service, the devotee values that. When Srila Prabhupada had asked his devotees, disciples to construct a temple in Vrindavan, so Gurudas Prabhu and other devotees were in charge, and a big problem for all of them was getting cement. Cement was not available anywhere. And Prabhupada contacted life members whom he had met in different parts, and he did various things, and finally he got cement. And then finally cement came by the trucks. Prabhupada himself was there, and he had counted all the sacks of the cement. And then he supervised all the sacks being transported to the godown. And then Prabhupada said, is it sealed carefully now? Have you counted all of it? Have you locked it carefully? So the devotees who were there, they felt as if Prabhupada was treating the cement bags as if they were gold bags. So why? Prabhupada sannyasi. But Prabhupada saw the cement is essential for the service of Krishna, for building a temple for Krishna. Therefore, he valued it enormously. So in this way, actually speaking, what Srila Prabhupada focused on was the devotional utility, the devotional potential. So for a devotee, for one's own sake, neither gold nor stone matters. But for Krishna's sake, even stone can be valued as much as gold. So that is a transcendental perspective, that is a devotional perspective. And in this Bhagavad Gita verse, Krishna is saying that one who has understood spiritual reality, has become situated in the spiritual reality by knowledge and realization, that person has nothing material can make me happy. And therefore that person stays equipoised, unaffected by anything material, and sees everything material equally. We'll continue in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.